at 10 miles per hour. Tonight becoming mostly cloudy, low 28. The wind from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow mostly cloudy with a high of 45. The wind from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night cloudy with a chance of rain or snow in the evening and a chance of snow after midnight, the low 32. Wednesday mostly cloudy with a high of 45. Wednesday night through Thursday night mostly cloudy with lows in the low 30s and a high Thursday in the upper 50s. And the outlook for Friday, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the low 30s to the mid 40s. Most locations reporting sunshine. Rockford checked in with 37 degrees. It was 34 at O'Hare. Bloomington, 40. Mattoon, 42. Carbondale, 45. At South Bend, 33. Lafayette, 39. Indianapolis, 38. Terre Haute, 41. Willard Airport reported 41 degrees at the top of the hour in a sunny sky. The dew point, 15. The relative humidity, 35%. The wind out of the east at 6. The barometric pressure, 30.22 and steady. And at 12:38, 42 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. President Obama addresses the nation tonight on military operations in Libya. NPR's Don Gagne reports.
The U.S. military operation in Libya started 9 days ago. Since then, President Obama has faced criticism from Republicans and from some Democrats for not having stated firm goals and for not getting congressional approval first. Tonight's speech will be his first major attempt to explain. He offered a preview in his weekly address on Saturday, saying the U.S. should not and cannot intervene every time there's a crisis somewhere in the world.
But I firmly believe that when innocent people are being brutalized, when someone like Gaddafi threatens a bloodbath that could destabilize an entire region, and when the international community is prepared to come together to save many thousands of lives, then it's in our national interest to act.
Yesterday, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Defense Secretary Robert Gates made the case in joint appearances on the Sunday morning network news programs. On NBC's Meet the Press, Gates was asked if Libya fits the definition of a vital U.S. interest.
No, I don't think it's a vital interest for the United States, but we clearly have interests there, and it's a part of the region which is a vital interest for the United States.
Secretary of State Clinton quickly followed, stating that the U.S. is acting as a member of NATO, pointing out that when the U.S. asked for NATO allies to join the war in Afghanistan following 9/11, they responded.
When it comes to Libya, we started hearing from the UK, France, Italy, other of our NATO allies. This was in their vital national interest.
Senator Richard Lugar will hold one of several hearings on Libya on Capitol Hill later this week. On Meet the Press, he says the president should have sought congressional approval and
there must be a plan. There must be objectives, the end game, what we want to achieve, and then at least some means of, as to how that's going to occur. That has not happened as yet.
The chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Democrat Carl Levin, was on CNN. He backed up the White House on Libya, adding that the no-fly zone is working.
It has set Gaddafi back. He's on his heels now, moving his troops towards his capital, where he's strong. But it has prevented the slaughter of Libyan people. And that is what the trigger was for the president.
Yesterday, NATO announced that it's taking over command of the operation. That's something the president will be emphasizing tonight. But Secretary Gates, while stressing that U.S. ground forces will not be deployed to Libya, also said yesterday it's impossible to say if the U.S. military will still be involved in Libya at year's end. And there's the wider ongoing unrest in the region that presents more unknowns. That's something Republican Senator John McCain cautioned about on Fox News Sunday. He cited Yemen as just one example.
Yemen is entirely different. This is going to be a huge problem because it is basically a tribal society, as you know, cobbled together the country by the British. And so it's going to be very difficult in some of these countries.
McCain said he feels good about the chances of democracy taking hold in Tunisia and Egypt. Elsewhere, there are huge questions, he said, noting that every country is different. Don Gagne, NPR News, Washington.
You'll find the president's speech on AM 580, FM 90.9, and WILL-TV, as well as streaming at will.illinois.edu tonight at 6:30 Central Time. There's a new way to read to your children at bedtime or to distract them while you're trying to get something done. If you have a smartphone or an iPad, you download a kids' book app in no time. From classic stories created specifically as an app, these books include narration, animation, and interactive features. Some kids are getting their first exposure to books, as a matter of fact, on a digital device. NPR's Lynn Neary has more.
Michelle Kripalani is deeply invested in Dr. Seuss these days for two reasons. His company, Ocean House Media, has the rights to develop the works of Dr. Seuss as digital books, everything from Green Eggs and Ham to The Cat in the Hat. Kripalani also has a two-year-old daughter, Kentia, who loves Dr. Seuss, especially on her father's iPad.
Boy, she can navigate on that thing. It's incredible. There's something about a child's ability to navigate by touching what they want. And I believe that's the magic here. It's just that the child is able to touch the tree or touch the bird or touch the word that they don't know. And that's really one of the things that just changes everything.
What's that? The kitty, kitty. Can you touch the cat?
Cat.
Good job.
Meow.
No, Pat.
Kripalani doesn't consider himself an expert on reading. He began his career as a video game developer. But he says his team was very aware that Theodore Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss, cared deeply about literacy. So in developing digital versions of books like The Cat in the Hat, they wanted to use the interactive features to help children learn to read.
And as the app is reading the book, the individual words are highlighting. So the child is getting an association between what they're hearing and the actual word that's being spoken at the time. Or they can also touch on any of the pictures, and they get a picture-word association. So if the child taps on cat, for example, the letters C-A-T float up, and the narrator speaks in a clear voice, cat.
With the ebook market so hot right now, a lot of people are eager to get in on the ground floor. Rick Richter left the traditional publishing world to found Ruckus Media, which develops digital versions of well-known kids' books, as well as brand new book apps like A Present for Milo.
What a 2 to 4 year old wants in an app really is to poke and be satisfied and really a very high degree of interactivity. So Milo has 80 different touch points and 125 different animations. And they're randomized, of course, so every time the child enters, it's a different experience.
A Present for Milo begins simply enough with a story about a cat and a mouse.
Who's there, there, there? Milo, that's who! And away they go.
Words appear as the narrator speaks them, and illustrations come alive when touched. A mouse squeaks. A plane flies. A piano plays. Other book apps developed by Ruckus are less interactive, but they might offer other options, substituting a well-known actor's narration with a parent's voice, for example. Richter believes these apps are an entirely new art form.
People ask us, are you creating books? Are you creating games? Are you creating, you know, animations? And the answer is yes. And that's what we set out to do. Books you can play with and games you can read.
But as you might expect, for some, an app will always be just an app.
It's not a book for a number of reasons.
Philip Nell is a professor of English and director of the Children's Literature Program at Kansas State University.
One is that in a traditional reading experience, the reader is in charge. The reader acts on the book. With the interactive ebook, the reader does still act on the book, but the book also acts on, and depending on the adaptation, sometimes against the reader. So I would say that it's not a book. It's maybe a relative of the book, but it's not quite a book.
Nell agrees with Richter that these apps are something entirely different. He says highlighting the words can be helpful to a young reader, but he thinks some of the sound effects and interactive features may interfere with the process of reading.
Reading may be involved, but there's more to it than that, and it's different than that. It's, you know, we don't read a film, we watch a film. We don't read a video game, we play a video game. And I was trying to think, what's the verb to describe what the enhanced ebook experience is like. Is it work? Is it use? Do we play an enhanced ebook?
It's true that some of the bells and whistles in kids' book apps can be distracting, says Elizabeth Bird. She's a librarian at the New York Public Library who's come up with some criteria for evaluating children's book apps. She says it's important that all the artwork and interactive features in an app are well integrated with the story. Obviously, not all apps are equal, says Bird, but the ones that get it right can take a book to a new level.
They allow you to do things that you really couldn't do before. For example, there's a wonderful Peter Rabbit app that's out right now, which sort of turns Peter Rabbit into a virtual pop-up book. And you can go beyond that. I mean, there are apps where you can touch a word, it will pronounce it for you, but it can pronounce it for you in any language. So you could learn a language a second way by using one of these picture book apps.
Bird doesn't believe apps are about to overtake books. She says kids move seamlessly back and forth between traditional print books and digital books all the time. And if a parent wants to use a book app to distract a child, well, Bird doesn't see a problem with that either.
Let's say that I'm in a grocery store and I see a parent handing their phone to their child. Do I want them to hand the child a game like Angry Birds, or do I want them to hand them Freight Train by Donald Cruz in the app form? I would prefer that they hand them the book.
Kids' book apps are so new, says Michelle Cripollani, it's not surprising there are problems still to be resolved. But when he thinks about his daughter, those questions go away.
I just stand back in awe, and I just say, wow, she is just going to be able to absorb so much faster, so much earlier. It's really, really awe-inspiring when you see a, you know, 3 or 4-year-old child that really gets it.
And of course, just like a good old-fashioned book, an app works best when a parent and child enjoy it together.
Cynthia, can you touch the puppy?
Pup.
Can you touch the cup?
Cup.
Good job.
Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.
You'll find links to the apps for The Velveteen Rabbit, The Cat in the Hat, A Present for Milo, and more at npr.org.
WILL is your source for full-service news and information. We've aired NPR's award-winning news programs for the past 40 years and provided our own local and regional news coverage. We're also proud to have aired Focus, our locally hosted talk show, for the past 30 years. Our spring pledge drive begins Saturday, April 9th, and we're encouraging listeners who are committed to this type of service to call in with their pledge of financial support or give online now at willpledge.org.
WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 28th of March, 2011.